Chapter 15, which is but primer on the canvas. Quote, "It was many and many a year ago, in a castle by the sea, that a maiden there lived, whom you may know by the name of Adelphine. And this maiden lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me." See Edgar Allan Poe's poem, Annabel Lee. The next morning the group said goodbye to Sylvia and walked to the station. Mario, the film producer, was waiting for them when they arrived. He gave them their tickets and led them to the proper platform, then went to buy a paper. While Mahogany and Adelphine looked at the schedule board, Harvey was left to himself. He stared blankly across the tracks, looking into the windows of a waiting train. The people around him were reflected in the glass, and he recognized one of them. It was the young woman from the journey of 2 days before. The train began to move, and the reflection hopped from window to window until it disappeared. Harvey turned quickly. She was only 14 feet away. He had a second chance. This time he would not hesitate. He called to her. But as soon as he did, his voice was drowned in the screech of a whistle. And before he could call again, Mario and the others rushed up and pulled Harvey aboard the arriving express. They found a first-class compartment and settled in. Mahogany and Adelphine sitting shoulder to shoulder on one side, and Mario and Harvey taking their places on the other.
"Cosa è successo con gli Stati Uniti?" exclaimed Mario, shaking his head and looking up from the paper. "Tutte le persone e i loro cani sono armate. Voi finirete tutti per ammazzarvi."
Translation: "What's happened to the United States? Everyone and their dog is armed. You're going to all end up killing yourselves."
"Tutte le persone e i loro cani," echoed Harvey.
The two continued to talk until they reached La Spezia, where the group transferred to a local train for the remainder of the ride. The trip along the Ligurian coast was not unlike the ride along the French Riviera. Its tracks were cut into the cliffs and passed through numerous tunnels, opening only occasionally to offer a glimpse of a town. When they emerged at Santa Margherita, they got off.
"Questo è il mio paese favorito," said Adelphine.
Translation: "This is my favorite town." As they walked down from the station, they were overwhelmed by the color and fragrance of flowers. There were blossoms everywhere, blossoms in the windows, blossoms on the balconies, blossoms along the fences, blossoms in the yards. When they reached the bay, they could see the lush green hills of the coast, spotted with an occasional villa, plunging into the turquoise water. Because there was no train to Portofino, they boarded a local bus. Portofino had long been a favorite hideaway for famous artists and international tourists, and it was not unusual that its small native population be outnumbered by visitors. It was built at a natural breakwater created by a small peninsula, a mile long and a quarter mile wide, that jutted south into the sea. The port itself was nestled in the corner made by the northeast border of the cape and the shore, and the town enjoyed the warm sun of morning and the cool shadows of afternoon. The narrow road from Santa Margherita wound carefully along the coast and let them off 100 yards above the town. There was an exhibition in progress at the wharf, which was filled with the world's newest electric luxury cars. It had taken many long, destructive years, but government regulations had finally forced the wealthy to begin to invest in electronic transportation.
"Qué bello, no?" said Mario. "You Americans developed the technology 20 years ago, but it took Italian Fiat to begin production."
They continued until they came to a stone path labeled Passeggiata al Faro, or Path to the Lighthouse. The walkway,
bordered by a finely trimmed hedge, rose from the shadows of the bay into the afternoon sun that slipped over the hills of the peninsula. Halfway to the lighthouse, they arrived at the castle. A white gravel entrance took them past the servants' quarters to the beginning of a stone stairway. From there, they climbed in switchback fashion, ducking occasionally beneath canopies of ivy and moving through an extensive garden of red, yellow, and blue flowers. The stairs ended at a terrace that spread before the main entrance of the house. "Venite," said Mario, stepping through the door. The first floor was announced by a large vestibule. To the left was the dining room and kitchen. To the right was the drawing room, and next to it a magnificent marble staircase. The stairs took them to the second floor, where they found an expansive split-level hall of polished gray marble. The elevated area in the rear gave access to a set of bedrooms on each side, and opened at the north to a large balcony terrace. The view from the terrace was magnificent. They could see the harbor below them, Santa Margherita to the east, and, high enough now to see over the trees, the Mediterranean as it extended from the west side of the peninsula. Mahogany and Adelphine remained on the balcony, while Mario and Harvey continued to the third floor. It was a copy of the second, except that the terrace at the north was replaced by a small balcony to the south. They rested there, looking over the gardens, while Mario explained his plans. "I have business tonight and tomorrow in Milano," he said, "but the new superhighway from Genoa, planned for the World Cup of Italia 90, has just been finished, so I should be back for dinner tomorrow. We can discuss your acting at that time. Until then, I will see to it the servants attend to your needs." Harvey was the perfect guest to enjoy what Mario could offer, because though he had taken on the producer's personality, he had not taken on his responsibilities. His host sensed this and led the captain to his personal library. Harvey was browsing a copy of Virgil's Aeneid when Mahogany and Adelphine came in to report they were going to continue to walk to the lighthouse. Mario left Harvey with his books and accompanied the couple to the path. Then he bade them farewell and returned to Portofino for the drive to Milano. A light cover of pine needles sprinkled the walk as it continued to the tip of the peninsula, and the couple could hear the waves that were crashing up the shore as they approached the lighthouse. When they reached the edge of the sea, the wind drummed in their ears, and they felt they were at the end of the earth. "Arrgh," growled Adelphine. "I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of golden sand. How few! Yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, while I weep. O God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? O God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream?" Footnote: Edgar Allan Poe, poem Dream Within a Dream. Mahogany was too taken with the excitement of the place to appreciate the poem, so Adelphine refrained from reciting more and stood silently in the wind.